walking backwards and forwards from the campsite to the Shenton Park train station on a narrow road. No footpath in those days. All bushland. The dog's home down the road, up the hill and down the road. And then we'd come down to our track to our campsite where we lived. And that was my home. Kaya, my name's Lynette Coomer. Born in Collie, Ngalakala Butcherland. My mum is Wilman, but I now live in Kwinana. One thing about that little home that my parents and my grandmother had built, it didn't get knocked down in any stormy weather. It was firm and strong. It had wooden poles. They'd take off the paper bark and they'd put the tree trunks in. Then they'd get more strong sticks and put it across and that. And we'd also used to scavenge the nails from materials that the rich people had thrown into tips. One man's junk, another man's treasure. So we'd use those nails to nail the tin down on the wood to keep it safe and sound. There was lots of little holes in there where old nails used to be. But, you know, it didn't seem to bother us. My dad used to bring home sometimes the black tar bitumen stuff because he used to work on the Melville Roads Board in Melville. And he used to bring some of that home and warm it up and bitumen up the little holes that was in our little house.
I'm Dr. Denise Cook, and my book is called That Was My Home, Voices from the Noongar Camps in Fremantle and the Western Suburbs.
Denise, how recent is this history, people living in camp situations in the Western Suburbs and in Fremantle?
Well, really until the 1950s. So 1951, the Claremont camp was bulldozed. People were here at this camp at Shenton Park till the late 1950s, about 58, 59, not exactly sure when. And certainly the camps around South Beach have come and gone over the years.
Did you yourself grow up in Perth?
Yeah, in Fremantle. Yeah, I was born in Fremantle and grew up there. So my dad went to school in Claremont. It felt like it was quite a personal history for me.
We had no doors. We used to put up a rug. Rugs and that used to be handed out to us by the Department of Native Welfare. The beds that we did have were from the tip. No TV, no technology in those days. So we had that very strong family connections and ties, even if it was sitting down on the ground by our outside fire with our pots and tins that we made for kettles and that. So everything was all done around there by the campfire. We were just happy and content with what we had.
Can you give us some of the context of why people were living rough or living in camps in this area at that time?
Well, it was very, very hard for Aboriginal people to rent a house, and most of them didn't have the money to do it anyway. So they were kind of forced into camps. And I know the Department of Native Welfare tried to set up kind of more controlled areas like reserves, but there was so much opposition. Every time they found an area in the metro area that might be suitable, the local residents and the local council would all get up this huge opposition to it, and nothing would happen. So really people were just left through much of the 20th century, left kind of camping on private land where they perhaps worked for the landowner, or the landowner recognised that it was their traditional country and that, you know, people always camped there. Or they were in the Crown land. It was the City of Perth Commonage in the 1850s and then later became the UWA, University of WA endowment land. So it was just bush for a long time. And that was the kind of land where people could be kind of on the outskirts of suburbs where they could get work, find water, but also, far enough away from houses that they would be sort of more or less left alone.
What were meal times like, and what kind of food did you have while you were living at the camps here?
We used to eat lots of damper because we had no electricity, so we had to use our food quite quickly. So we had lots and lots of damper that was made. Half the time you couldn't even afford a loaf of bread, if you were allowed to go into the shop and buy a loaf of bread. If any of the family members come from bush or from country, they would bring us big mob of kangaroo meat or something, and we'd quickly cook him up and that. We didn't have any fancy pots and pans. A lot of things was picked up from the local tip area. if we ran out of the fresh food, because we couldn't keep it too long, would be tin food. Yep. Lots and lots of tin food.
How much is known about these camps, do you think, among the general population in Perth?
Really not very much at all. And I guess that's why I wrote the book, or partly why I wrote the book, is when I talk to elders about, you know, I've got this idea to do this research and produce something about the camps, would that be okay? And what kind of outcome would you like to see from it? And lots of people said to me they'd like to see a book and that they'd like people to know more about it. So really most people are very surprised, I think, that the camps were here until so recently.
I did have a sibling that was born here.
Born at the camp here in Shenton Park.
Born in the Shenton Park camp. King Edward Memorial Hospital is not her birthplace. This is her birthplace here, amongst where those houses and the remaining of those trees that are there. That's where my sister was born.
Wow. Do you remember that day?
No, I can't remember that day. I could have been out bushwalking. Or we could have been down the local tip, rummaging through to put up more material and stuff from the tip to keep our little home safe and sound.
I'd like people to understand that our suburbs have a shared history. It's not just a non-Aboriginal history in the western suburbs, that really until the 1950s and often later, Aboriginal people were living in camps in and around much more expensive houses. When somebody writes a history of a suburb, I think this is a really important part of that suburb's history that needs to be in there. And when somebody kind of looks at what sites are important in the suburb, I'd like them to think about, well, where did Noongar people camp, and talk to people and look, you know, do the research to find out what was important to Noongar people, what were those interactions like between people in the camps and people in the wider community. There's all sorts of really lovely stories that are in the book that, yeah, I just think they bring a richness to our history that otherwise wouldn't be known.